Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
And welcome into the show this morning, Hunt Fish Talk. Glad to have you aboard. I'm Keith Washer, and this morning I'm joined by the president of the Louisiana Outdoor Writers Association, Wendy Billiott, a.k.a. the Bayou Woman, and Don Dubuque as well. Good morning, Don and Wendy.
Good morning.
What's happening down on the bayou?
Lots of pollen on the bayou.
Yeah. Pollen on the bayou. Sounds like a title of a new book.
Oh, my goodness. Just, you know, if you want to get the sniffles and be afraid you might be coming down with the coronavirus, just go work in the yard.
Yeah, as long as we don't have any corona on the bayou. No corona on the bayou unless it's got lime with it.
Well, I tell you, it doesn't take us long here in South Louisiana to turn on spring, huh? It's just like you snap your finger in 1 week, and man, it's done. It seems like everything's green. Don, I talked to Jeff Bull about the Sockaway trip on the Chifunka. It sounds like the Sockaway made you sweat a bit before turning on later that afternoon, huh?
Yeah, and it sounded a lot like your trip with him, too, with the skipper, the champion of skipping in the front of the boat, you know?
Boy,
he's really good at that. He's good at that technique, isn't he?
And it looks easier than it is because there was numerous times I said, okay, give me that. Let me try this. How hard can it be? And I just could not get it to skip. You know, as hard as I threw it, I think it's all in that wrist.
Yeah, somewhere. Now, he's got a lot of practice at it. He's out there today working them over, so we should get a report from him.
Good deal, good deal. Well, this morning we're not going to be talking about soccer, right? We'll be talking speckled trout. The situation that we find ourselves here in Louisiana all came out last spring when some numbers were leaked from the department, and those numbers showed numerous alarming statistics, including the spawning stock biomass being at the lowest levels ever observed, age 3 and over females being caught were at its lowest levels ever observed, and the recreational landings are at its lowest levels since 1990. Since then, the numbers have been confirmed. The state says they've been overfished for at least 6 years, and it looks as if the trend is going to continue if there isn't anything done to reverse the trend. The department is done with all the public meetings and the presentations, and now we're just waiting for the commission to see it, and then they'll have the final say as to what needs to be done. Last month we had, you know, our Hunt Fish Talk show, and we talked all about this, but Wendy was the only one to have attended one of these meetings. That meeting was held in Gray, Louisiana, and since then, Jason Adrians has appeared in numerous other locations with his presentation, and Don and I got the chance to attend the one in Slidell. So that's where I want to start this morning. I'd like to get everyone's take on the presentation, and not only that, I'd like to hear what you thought about the comments that were made afterwards, because if you listen to the public, the charter captains and the recreational fishermen, you can really get some good feedback as to where the public stands on this. So let's start out with that. I'll start with you, Don, and get your take of the presentation, and then we can kind of zoom in on different elements of it as the show progresses.
Well, I got to tell you, I contacted Jason after that and thanked him and congratulated him for putting on what I thought was a very good presentation. I also liked the employment of the clicker situation. That really helped speed the thing along and gave you immediate results. If I had any criticism of it, the only thing I would say was I didn't like the choice of answers that they gave to the fishermen. I thought it was too broad. There was I like it a lot, I like it a little bit, I like it more than a little bit, a little less than a little bit, I don't like it at all. too many variables. You know, I like to live in a black and white world, unfortunately. Everything to do with biology is a gray area. And I would have liked to have seen maybe a good, better, best, but as far as giving too many choices to the fishermen, because I think it's too hard to glean exactly where they stand on it when you give them that many choices. I think he probably would have had an answer for that if I would present it to him and tell him that. I'm sure there's some reason why he fashioned it in that style, but I would have rather seen it given the fishermen less choices to deal with. I think it would have resulted in a little bit better reflection of what the true opinion is. But other than that, I thought it was great. I really congratulate the entire department for taking the stance of really involving the public and getting their opinions, and even taking it further than public hearings and going out and emailing surveys to ask people what they think about it. I don't think those should be given the strength that those that appeared, because they are much more informed. If you went to that meeting, he spent a lot of time giving you the history of how they collect the data, what it means, how they interpret it, and then the choices that could arise out of this. I thought that was an excellent job. Conversely, if you just listen to the last hour, I think we get the complete opposite in our turkey program, where the public is basically shut out. They're not asked for their opinion. They don't have any input into it. They're not even asked to volunteer to help make things better. Whereas speckled trout, I thought overall, if I had to give them on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably give them an 8.5 to a 9 on the presentation.
Don, yeah, did the presentation itself take about an hour?
I didn't time it. I don't know. Keith, you were there at the same one I was. Do you think it was an hour long or maybe a little longer on the presentation?
Just
a little longer than that.
It did, but he did a good job at keeping those slides going and moving on. The time they gave us to vote, it didn't really take that long, and everybody voted pretty quick. Now, we did struggle with time when the comments and the questions afterwards. That seemed to drag on. Everybody had some they're pretty opinionated when they got up there. So you kind of struggled to close that off. But as far as the presentation, it was just a little over an hour. But, Don, as far as the selections, and I heard somebody mention that's how Sea Grant, Louisiana Sea Grant, orchestrates all the little selections as far as breaking it down into strongly approved or slightly approved and all that. So I don't know if that has anything to do with Louisiana Department of Wildlife Fisheries.
Jason,
yeah, well,
clarified. I'm sorry, Don.
No, go ahead, Wendy.
Jason clarified at the beginning of our meeting that this was a model that has been successfully used, and that is why they used it. So whether that was through Sea Grant or whomever, I'm assuming Sea Grant. The strongly support, slightly support, you know, the A through E choices, it was a model, a standard model that they often use. So,
yeah. Well, Donna, I remember you bringing it up when this first came to light about how Alabama was, getting comments from the public and making the public more entrenched into the conversation. Is this meeting the standard of what they're doing as far as the clickers and broodings and getting the opinions?
Absolutely. I don't think that the fishermen themselves are getting shortchanged in any way, shape, or form of giving their making their opinion heard on this, and also as far as being well informed on the whole situation, on the operation and the procedure, and then finally at whatever they arrive at as far as offering choices to the commission to make their vote. I think the opinion of the fishermen is going to be a strong influencer in what action they take.
Yeah. And, Wendy, I know we talked last month about this, but if you can just give your overall review of the presentation.
I wanted to ask you a question real quick. Did you get a number? Did you say how many people were voting at the meeting in Slidell?
I did not.
It was about 110 people.
That registered to vote on the clickers?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he mentioned it. I don't know if Don caught that as we were voting. It just doesn't come. I didn't remember the actual number. Don, how long?
What were the demographics? What were the demographics? Our group was 52% were over 60 years of age.
We were even higher than that. We were higher than that in Slidell.
Yeah, I have the percentage. Actually, under 20 was 1%. So that's another subject right there. But let's see, 50 to 60 was 28%. Over 60 was 58%.
Okay, pretty close.
Yeah, it's about the same. He said that's about what it was throughout all his presentation.
Well, Jason prefaced the whole thing by saying we need to move quickly because we've got a lot of information to get through in a short amount of time. We're trying to keep that presentation part to an hour to allow time, for public comment afterward. But I just got the overall feeling that there wasn't enough time for people to look at the, if they hadn't done any homework ahead of time, and that's why I kept saying last month, if you get a chance to look at this presentation online, look at it before you go, because if that's the first time you've ever seen those graphs, to me, it's a lot of information to try to look at and absorb and understand in just a matter of seconds to register your vote. Did you find it was ample time for people to understand the slides?
I understood them only because we've been talking about this for a year. But
right.
For those that are brand new to it, yeah, I could see how they could struggle, especially when you hit the biomass charts. And it just gets rough. But, I mean, I understood it. And like I said, but we've been seeing these numbers since, what, last spring. So,
Well, I think he also made it very clear. I think he made it clear that if you didn't want to stand up and voice your opinion, that's not the only way to comment. In fact, it's probably not the best way. You can go home, digest the material that you saw, form an opinion, and shoot them an email or write them a letter.
True.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I think for the most part, especially with the older, over 60 being more than half of the group, everybody kept up pretty good. So there was some questioning with the, if you want to make this throughout all of Louisiana or just keep it, to local areas. And that was, I think we had to redo that vote because that was caused a little confusion. But other than that, no, I don't think there was too much confusion. Well, all right, we're going to, let's get to the break here, guys. Let's break it. And when we get back, we're going to talk about the freshwater diversions and how that may be impacting these numbers. It was a big factor as far as the charter captains are concerned and the recreational fishermen at the meeting I attended. So we'll pick back up with that when we keep it tuned right here. We're talking speckled trout this morning on More Outdoors. Welcome back to the show on Fish Talk. We're talking speckled trout this morning. Our beloved speckled trout fishing seems to be in jeopardy, or so says the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. The department says they're looking to reduce the harvest of speckled trout by 20% in the next 5 years. And to do that, they've laid out numerous options as far as tightening the daily creel or reducing the minimum length or both. But I want to get to something that I got the sense was a big issue at the meeting that I attended, and that was the fact that the biologists are excluding the freshwater diversions from the whole scenario. To me, it seemed like everyone that we heard from that commented mentioned the diversions, and whether you cut the limit down to 10, it really isn't going to matter because the fish just aren't going to come into the areas where there is now fresh water. So I'd like to get your take on this, Wendy. Did you hear a lot from the people that claim the freshwater diversions were to blame, and what's your thoughts on the diversions? Should they be included into the equation?
No, they didn't talk about that because they were very tight-reined on the public comment section. Anybody that started to talk about anything else other than what was presented and what the options were was shut down right away. So maybe Jason loosened up the rules on that. But they really weren't allowed to go into other topics in the public comment because they wanted time for everybody to be able to say what they wanted to say about what the options were. But I'm wondering what I have heard outside of the meetings in regard to freshwater is not so much about diversions, which most of which are not even completed yet, was the fresh water from the opening of the spillway, historical openings last year, both spillways. So are we talking about two different things here? I mean, fresh water is fresh water, but were they talking about the planned diversion specifically, Keith?
Yeah, they were targeting the planned diversions. I think the opening of the spillway was kind of lumped into their conversation, but they were you know, Mardi Gras Pass, they were talking about specific man-made diversions as far as that have come about in the recent years. But, yeah, I mean, some mentioned the spillway, but, you know, what are you going to do about the spillway? The spillway, that's just, you know, that's automatic. That's going to open. So, Don,
well,
were you able to
say? They open them when they need to open them. It doesn't happen every year. So, that's, you know, that's the spillways, that's a more controlled thing.
Right.
We have had this freshwater diversion conversation several times over the last few years. And I go back to historically, people had to go further out to reach saltwater to do their saltwater fishing, historically. But as the saltwater intruded and encroached, those things changed, and we've just forgotten how things used to be, and we've gotten lazy, and we have, you know, speckled trout and redfish right out in front of the camp now, in the canals and in the bayous where it didn't used to be that way. So you see how things have cycled. So, and I know some of the old timers, and probably not that you're an old timer, Don, but probably even Don remembers. He's probably seen this change over his history in fishing, how things have changed. So the other side of this coin is, if you want coastal restoration, you cannot have both. If you're going to do coastal restoration and you're looking at it as a big old huge picture, and some of these areas will benefit from more sediment, and then some of them will benefit from a little bit more fresh water, and all of that goes hand in hand, well, you can't fight against each other. You can't scream and shout that we want coastal restoration, but we also still want saltwater intrusion and fish off our front porch. It doesn't work.
Yeah, I get exactly what you're saying. I think it's all about priorities, and I often tell people it's like a picture. If you picture a guy on his front porch with water halfway up his house saying, we need to do something about this, and then a fisherman driving by saying, oh, the fishing is terrible. You know, it's two different spectrums that you're talking about. Don, were you able to stay to the end of the meeting in Slidell? Did you hear any of those?
No, I didn't. I left right after the presentation and the final votes. I didn't hear the comments, but it sounds like we're talking about two different issues with regard to freshwater. One, I think they were probably at the wrong meeting if they wanted to argue against the diversion projects that the CPRA is planning to implement. That would be better off discussed in a CPRA meeting about coastal restoration. The other side of it was I did hear some people say that they thought the data was inaccurate because of the freshwater coming through the Bonnie Carey Spillway, the Mardi Gras Pass situation, and that they could not get a good handle on the speckled trout population because there's been so much fresh water. Well, the answer to that is, you know, the wildlife and fisheries has nothing to do as far as control about freshwater. They can certainly give their opinion to the CPRA and to the public on what the impacts of freshwater will do to saltwater species. But as far as them going out and doing samplings and avoiding freshwater areas, you can't do that. You've got to take the samplings in the habitat that's given you. And I think they did a good job of that. I don't know if they did a good job explaining it, but I think what you were probably hearing, and probably not so much in Wendy's meeting because it's not as big an issue over in Dulage and Cocodrie area as it is in the Pontchartrain and the lower Plaquemines Parish and Lafitte areas, is that they wanted to argue about whether freshwater diversion is a worthy way to bring back the coast, given that you're going to displace saltwater species. And that argument would have been in the wrong place. The purpose of this meeting was not to deal with that. It's certainly an issue. It's a tremendous issue. It's a large issue, but it shouldn't have been discussed at those meetings.
Yeah, well, I stayed for the whole thing, and they took their opportunity to complain about the, you know, all the freshwater we're seeing. And they did mention the numbers not being right, so we could talk about that later on. But I think it's just tough. So many elements to this. As far as I wish we could just they could just get these numbers on a, you know, without these freshwater diversions. But I don't even know how you would factor the diversions into the numbers we're seeing. And maybe that's why they
just
left it alone.
the Bonnie Carey issue could be one that you could maybe give a little bit less credence to, because that, as Wendy said, is only an occasional, you know, it's becoming more and more regular, but it's not planned that way. The freshwater diversions are permanent. If they put those right in, that's forever and ever. And, you know, you got to deal with what you got. So, you know, again, to take samplings, even during periods of a lot of fresh water caused by diversions, they need to do it that way. Why would you do it another way if you're not going to have diversions?
Yeah. And, you know, I tend to listen to the charter captains. They are out there every day. They know, you know, they know what's going on. This matters to them. It's their livelihood. So, you know, when they speak, I listen as far as, you know, what's the blame for these low numbers. But like I said, I just wish, man, we can just get some straight numbers without, you know, formulating fresh water and everything. But Wendy, back to what you said as far as, you know, things fluctuating and having to go further out to catch speckled trout and then working their way back in as the saltwater intruded. Are you talking before they started collecting the numbers? Because, I mean, some of these numbers are an all-time low, and I think they started collecting them in early 90s?
I'm talking way before that. I'm talking about the history of our coastal land loss since we've been keeping track of it and measuring it and instituting restoration projects. So, I don't know. Don may remember having to go further to catch speckled trout.
Old as I am, I still don't remember a lot of it. I do remember as a real young person seeing cypress trees in parts of St. Bernard that now there's nothing but dead stumps and stuff there as a result of erosion. But actually, I mean, the peak of fishing for saltwater in the interior marshes was in the late 70s and 80s. That's when it was really peaking because, as you said, the saltwater intrusion created the edge effect that brought saltwater species in closer to fishermen's you know, opportunity to get to them. But if you go way back, I'm talking 50s, 40s, early 60s, yeah, there was a lot of freshwater areas, and you didn't have the good saltwater fishing. When they talk about the good old days, it would have been in the 70s and 80s. That's when the peak of the fishing was, and now we're on the downslide because of loss of habitat. You know, it was poor in the beginning because there was so much fresh water so close in, you had to go further out. Then it got to the peak. It got real good because the salt water was in close. And now that we're pouring fresh water and mixing it in there, we're pushing them out again. But, you know, it's pretty simple stuff. But to argue, you know, again, they took the argument to the wrong place. If you want to argue against freshwater diversions killing your saltwater fishing, then you argue that with the CPRA. As far as what Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries has to do to restore speckled trout populations to a safe level, they got to do it dealing with the habitat they're given, which includes a lot of fresh water, and it's going to include even more.
And, Keith, I don't know if you remember this, but you mentioned that year 1990. I remember it well. I think it was around Christmas, maybe right before Christmas in 1989. We had snow. Down here, we had a terrible freeze. We had terrible conditions, and I know we had a serious fish kill.
Was that the biggest freeze that we saw that I'm remembering? I mean, I remember picking up fish out of the bayou in Lafitte. When I see the charts, it shows different winter kill indexes, but I distinctly remember that one. I think that was the one, 1990 or 1989.
It was 89. December of 89, and then, so you mentioned lowest, numbers are lowest since they've been since 1990. So 1990 would have been coming off of the heels of that hard, hard winter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, all right, let's get to the break. Don, you brought it up, the numbers. There was a little concern about how they get the numbers that they presented to us. That was a big question at the meeting I attended, just how accurate are the numbers. So leave it tuned right here. More Hunt Fish Talk on More Outdoors, WWL 105.3 HD2. Welcome back to the show. This morning we're talking speckled trout. The department says they are looking to reduce the harvest of speckled trout by 20% in the next 5 years. So how do we do it? And that is the question. But to start out with answering the question, we need to have a starting point, and The starting point is the numbers that the state has come up with. And I think we need to talk a little bit about this. First off, I want to get your take on what the comments were at the meetings. To me, it seemed like a lot of people were complaining that the numbers weren't accurate. I heard a lot of people saying they were never asked how many fish they were caught or about their past trips. So let me get to you first, Don, because I believe you're the most knowledgeable person in the room as far as knowing how these numbers are reached. It's my understanding that the final numbers come from three sources that merge together. One being the LA Creel numbers, the other phone calls that go out, and the third are the catch results from those gill nets that the biologists operate across the state. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's exactly what I think the three sources are, and they, you know, combine them all together to come up with some numbers. But let me point out, I believe that there's three types of data. Number one, you have scientific, which is what we're talking about, doing the surveys, the lock reel, doing the gill netting samples. That's scientifically gathered data, and you analyze it in a scientific way. Another type is what we call empirical. In other words, it's not scientific, but Keith and Wendy, you know from fishing yourself, all the people we talk to in our business who fish, the general consensus is speckled trout fishing has been not good or as good as it has been for a number of years. We're not seeing the numbers of big fish. We're not seeing the numbers of total fish. Whatever the reasons would be, I think there is empirical evidence to a fisherman, and that was certainly reflected by people think that we need to change the regulations. It was 72% who think we need more restrictions on some of the voting. And then the third type of information is anecdotal. My cousin's sister-in-law's husband told me that this was a, you know, and that's strictly story tale stuff. Old wives' tale. There's a lot of names for it. You don't.
You mean the stuff I'm really good at?
No, Wendy, you're pretty good at that scientific. But anecdotal stuff, just stories that people say, they told me this, or I remember this, or my Uncle Joe back in 19, whatever. You know, that's anecdotal. You don't put as much faith in it. But when the empirical evidence matches the scientific, which I think to a point, it's very, very close, I think you're on target. Unlike our waterfowl situation, which is in a crisis right now. They say the numbers are there. They're more than over the long-term average. But yet the empirical evidence, the people who trudge it out to the blind day after day and look at empty skies tell you, well, if they're there, where are they? Unlike the turkey situation, where they tell us, we don't have any turkeys. We got to move the season back. We got to shorten it. We can't kill as many. And then people who go out there say, well, turkey population's fine. I got them all over the cameras. I hear them gobbling. We see them all the time. That is empirical evidence that does not meet the scientific evidence. But in this case, I got to tell you, it's very, very close what people will tell you they're seeing on the water and what the biologists are telling what the data shows.
And I think that's why people are going along with this more. It's because their thoughts and their what they're seeing is lining up with the numbers. So I think that's why
but
they're
all,
willing to, you know. Go ahead, Wendy.
But all of the data was gathered directly by the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries, correct?
I think the Rex Caffey, what's his organization again? The
Sea Grant.
Sea Grant. I think they were involved in it too, in formulating the data accumulation.
But, I mean, as far as the gill nets go, that's strictly wildlife and fisheries.
Yeah.
And Lock Reel gathering the information, that's strictly wildlife and fisheries.
Right.
I was just trying to figure out if all our data is coming from, all of our scientific data is coming from one place, mainly Department of Wildlife and Fisheries.
Yeah, I would say it probably is. And then, you know, the Sea Grant program, their contribution may have only been the methodology of doing the public hearing.
Correct.
You know.
I, for one, wish Jason would have spent a little bit more time on explaining the gill net sampling and testing. I was very interested to know more about that. And it was just a very, you know, brief blip on the screen. But I would like to have known a little bit more about that. To me, that's an important factor in the whole accumulation of data. Because I know how Lock Creel works. I know how the phone surveys work and the email surveys. But that part I know very little about, and I think that's significant. Yeah. To me, that would be like the number one way that we're gathering data.
Yeah, well, and
if I'm not mistaken, what they do is they set those gill nets in specified areas, and they repeat those areas to keep. You got to have consistency. In other words, you got to have them
right.
Fixed down for so long in a certain area at a certain time of the year, so that you can compare apples to apples and apples to oranges. Now, if the habitat changes and say fresh water is invading it, well, then you're going to show less samplings in your gill net. But I think most of their surveys and the gill net thing pretty much matched up. And then their scientific evidence, I think, again, matched up with the empirical evidence is out there. How they got it, I'm not so much concerned with, you know, wanting to know the nuts and bolts of what they did. I'd rather look at the finished product. And when the finished product matches what the fishermen are seeing, it's got to be pretty close on target, if not exact.
Well, I think some of us who are show me people are probably the part of the population that don't trust the government and don't trust a study. Show me the money. Show me, show me, show me. Show me how you gathered this data so I can trust your science, because this is a big deal and I want to trust your science. And I did hear quite a few people, quite a few fishermen, quite a few who attended the meetings and were interested. They really wanted to trust the science. So you've got to lay that groundwork. To me,
there's no lack of reason why we should mistrust government in many instances.
Right.
Believe me, I'm one that's very skeptical of government. You need to be. But in this case, I don't know if I see an agenda on the part of the wildlife and fisheries to give a forced result, you know, without looking at it unbiased. I don't see where there'd be any gain in that.
Well, yeah. As Keith said, some people said they were never questioned, or they've never met anybody at the dock.
Well, that's the way samplings are done.
Correct.
Well, he answered that, and he said you got their samplings are broken to two different things. There's a certain sample that just asks certain questions and do not ask how much fish were caught, and then there's another one that goes out that asks how much fish are caught. So these people were just expressing their concerns that they weren't asked how much fish they were caught because they got a different survey, and Jason tried to explain how that goes. But as far as the numbers, you know, we got to start somewhere, and I mean, we got to have some kind of starting point. And, you know, a lot of the captains stood up at the meeting and they were given a chance to speak, and they complained that they weren't surveyed. So, but I mean, you got to believe these numbers are the best numbers we have as far as, you know, being close to anything we're going to be able to get. So I believe if we take those numbers and, you know, they point to a big problem. The slide that made the biggest impression on me was the graph that showed the percentage of age class that are spawning. And it showed that 81% of the fish that spawn are the one-year-old age class. So that's one-year-old fish. So if we get a freeze or anything like that, those one-year-old fish die, we could have a tough time repopulating them. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, definitely, yeah. And again, the empirical evidence, there's not as many big fish showing up. Gill nets show it. Surveys show it. And the empirical evidence of people going out and fishing. I mean, look, it's just Lake Pontchartrain, Keith. I mean, you know, in the 90s, uh-huh. It was so common to catch 7-8-pound trout coming off of the twin span. When's the last time you heard a big fish coming out of that area lately? I mean, it's been years.
Yeah.
It shows.
Numbers
it
and
matches.
Size, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think we're suffering from a double whammy as far as in Lake Pontchartrain, all that fresh water and the reduction of the overall population of speckled trout with that. So, well, let's get to a break right here. When we get back, we're going to talk about where we go from here and where you guys fall as far as what you'd like to see with the limits being tightened. So we'll pick back up with that after we return. Keep it tuned right here. We're talking speckled trout this morning on More Outdoors. Welcome back to the show on Fish Talk, talking speckled trout this morning. Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries has wrapped up their statewide meetings, and now all that's left is for the commission to see what they've come up with. As far as a recommendation. Don and Wendy, we've talked about a lot of things this morning, but when it's all said and done, we're most likely going to be looking at new regulations. Some of us will be upset, some will like it, but I'd like to get your opinion on what the new creel and the measurement should be, and also what you think the verdict will actually be. what will the final outcome of this be? So, look, none of us are biologists. I know you can take my opinion with a grain of salt, but it doesn't hurt to put it out there. So let's start with you, Wendy. What would you like to see, and what do you think the actual verdict will be?
Oh, Keith. I would be willing to agree to a reduction in the creel to 15 fish, but I am not convinced on increasing the minimum length. However, that wasn't a choice. Everyone, almost everyone that I heard from in this area, whether they went to the meeting or not, would agree to that. They were upset because what they would have agreed to was not on the list. So what they, by and large, would agree to around here is 15 fish, 12 inches. Evidently, that won't give us a 20% reduction over a five-year period. So your closest choice to that is 12 fish, 13 inches. It's a quandary to me because I know how many of those under 12-inch fish don't make it, and I don't think the wildlife and fisheries mortality rate was high enough. When I take all that into consideration, I cannot come down to one of these choices for me that would be acceptable. But I would agree to a reduction in the limit, and I'm just not sure that increasing the minimum length is going to save us any fish. I just don't. And I do want to remind everybody that Jason did explain on air with Don that there was no environmental impact study involved in this whatsoever because they're not equipped to do that. And the other thing, Keith, I wanted to add in case we don't ever come back to this topic again anytime soon is that a lot of people, and I'm sure it's because of all the pictures on social media, still don't believe that the charters make up 1% of the landings. And there's still some confusion of whether that 1% means charter fishing trips or just the take of the charter guide himself. And I don't think I'm clear on that.
I think that's total charter trips. Is that correct, Don?
That's my thinking too. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah. They're and I think it's because of social media. They do not believe that charter trips only account for 1% of the landings. Neither here nor there, but that's what they believe. So, you know, they're still harping on that. They're not believing that information. Where I see this is probably going to go from the choices that are available is probably a 12 and 13. The other one is 25 fish with a 14 length. Some people may be very, very happy with that.
Well, I'm looking at the graph right here, and you mentioned you'd like to see 15 with a 12-inch, and you can actually take the graph and mark it down. Now, it wasn't a selection that we could choose from, so it won't be an outcome, but if you look at this graph, you'll actually make progress with that, but it will take longer than 5 years, almost looks like 10 years to get where you want to be. So,
correct.
As far as, you know, with what you would want, I would think it would work, but they want to get that five-year range. Don, what do you think?
Well, first I want to ask Wendy a question. Are you using scientific, empirical, or anecdotal evidence to dispute that 10% discard mortality rate?
I thought they said 25%, or did they say 10% wildlife and fisheries?
10%.
I guess it's anecdotal. Hearing these people
okay.
talk about when here, typically here, when you see the birds, you get in a school, it's juvies, and people are so excited because they're on a double rig, and it's springtime, and it's little fish, and the majority of them, you're gonna keep one out of maybe 15 or 20, and because they're on them, and it's hot and heavy, and I've seen this, they're just ripping them off the hook. They're not taking their time. They are not worried about the mortality of those fish. So whether that's empirical partly and anecdotal partly, Well, do you have something different, Don?
Well, I'm thinking if you get into fish like that with a 14-inch minimum, you're not going to stay on them. You shouldn't stay on them. But that's an educational and an ethical behavior question there.
True.
But I'm thinking what I'm looking at. You know, you can go with a 14-inch minimum. and you can still keep your limit at 20 fish and still be over the 20% escapement rate that you need to do, increasing it. I think, and again, this is a combination of science and empirical evidence and some anecdotal what people want, because it's not Don Dubuque making this decision. It's going to be the Wildlife and Fisheries Commission with input from biologists and the public. But I'm looking, and I think it's going to land somewhere around a 14-inch minimum length and maybe 15 creel limit. I think that would be what most people say, at least the ones I've talked to, the ones that communicate with me, they would be happy with. And believe me, that 14-inch minimum, that's going to help keep that limit at 15, because there's a lot of small fish that are going to get back into the water or not even be fished for if you put that in. Now, the
but
slot limit, I don't think that's going to...
It's not an option.
Well, they haven't divulged
the
list yet.
Options.
But in,
maybe they changed the options.
Well, they haven't come up with the final options yet, but that was one that they were – these are all under consideration. But that's what – if you look at the graph, that's what it shows. You know, you could say at 14-inch and still have 20 fish. But you could go to 15, you know, 15 under 14-inch, and you'd raise it to about 30% if you went to that.
Yeah.
Keith, let's hear what you're thinking. What are you thinking? Where do you think it's going to land?
I think 13-inch minimum with a creel reduced to 12 looks to be like the choice they're going to get to. They're so focused on this 5 years, and they got to get in those 5 years. Haven't heard anything else about, you know, maybe going to 10 years. I don't know why that's not. I know you guys say that they analyze this every 5 years, and that's why they're focused on 5 years. But I don't know. Maybe we don't have to go so drastic and maybe turn it into 10 years. But what's your thoughts on the five-year thing?
Well, if you go to 10 years and you have to wait 10 years before you get a reevaluation, if the empirical evidence comes in and everybody starts catching plenty of fish and big fish show up and say, this thing is working better than we ever believed, you're going to be locked in to that regulation for 5 years longer than you would be. I think the shorter period of time you can get a reevaluation and then make some more changes to it, either go back up higher or go back down lower, I think that would be the best way to do it.
Well, the last meeting was February 29th. And so, Don, did Jason give you any idea when they're going to present the information to the commission?
No, he told me that they still had the email waiting on those to come back. And then when they get all of the emails and the letters that are written and the public hearing data, they're going to analyze all of it. Then they will give the report to the commission. Then there'll be final disposition. It's got to go through a period of scrutiny. There's a process that they have to go through. I would not expect any regulations to change and be put in effect any earlier than October, possibly later.
Okay. I'm just looking on the Wildlife and Fisheries website how they're listing the procedure after it goes to the commission. And whenever the commission decides, then they have to file a notice of intent.
Right. Yeah,
right.
That's why
and that's supposed to have a public comment period of time, too.
Oh, really? Correct. I did not know that.
Yes. And then after that, it goes to natural resources and legislative oversight process, which could be another 30 days. So,
yeah, don't expect
then it'll go back
to the public
hearings. For the final rule.
Right. After the notice of intent, I wouldn't expect public hearings again. I mean, it'll be open for public comment, but it'll only be by email or personal appearance at the commission meetings.
Let me see what their wording is on here.
And does that have the power to sway them, or is it just tell us
well,
what you think?
It's on them. It's on them at that point. And, you know, that brings up another whole can of worms is the selection of commissioners. Are the best people with less vested interest being put in on the commission? You know, because they're appointed at the pleasure of the governor. You don't get they're not voted in, they're not selected, no
True.
Influence by the public on who goes in there.
Yeah. Well, I think it's clear that something needs to be done. So hopefully, hopefully they could do what they did with speckled trout. I mean, if this works, you know, especially going, if they go to 14, I really think that's going to turn this whole area into a lot bigger fish being caught, because you always see the 11 and a half caught. So I got to think that if you turn it to like a 14 inch, maybe we'll see 13 and a half inch fish being caught, 14 inch being caught right at that line. So hopefully it all works.
I don't know if you remember there was a valley of tears and a wrenching of hands when they said we're going to five redfish. I don't hear a whole lot of people complaining about that.
Worked
anymore.
Out quite nicely, huh?
I think the same thing would happen with speckled trout over time.
Yeah.
Takes time.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about this numerous times on Huntfish Talk. Great talking with you guys.
You think?
This morning. Yeah. Oh, definitely. But run out of time. Don, you're going to pick back up next week. More outdoors. I'll be a part of that show when I bring you a North Shore Fishing Report from 8 to 9. We'll be talking a lot of sockeye. Sockeye spawn is in full effect. So we'll talk.
And we're going to have a fisherman who was abducted by aliens in the 7 o'clock hour. You don't want to miss that.
Oh, man. I got to see what that's all about.
Have a good weekend, guys.
Talking with you guys. Bye. Stay safe out on the water. And hey, stay safe on the land as well. Bye.
Don't drink no Coronas. See y'all later.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.